Welcome to the newest Thoughts from the Truck episode of OTRs. And today, as I promised in the last Thoughts from the Truck episode, we're going to elaborate on the concept of the AAA mentor. And that involves delving deeper into the AAAS, or the AAAs of mentorship. And the goal of this episode is to provide you areas to focus on that will improve your mentorship capabilities and in turn improve your business. So today we're going to discuss how mentorship will improve your business and also how you can begin to sharpen and hone the skills that a good mentor must have. So stay tuned, OTRs. So the real challenge is, how do veterinarians like us, who don't have the time, resources, or financial backing of a multi-million dollar company, who are faced with irregular work schedules, on calls, and emergencies, how can we facilitate our own personal and professional growth so we can continue to offer superior service to our clients while still remaining competitive in today's market? That is the challenge, and this podcast will provide you the roadmap to its solution. I'm your host, Dr. Eric, and welcome to Operators to Owners. Welcome back, OTRs. Today, I want to talk with you guys about becoming a AAA mentor. And if you remember back to our previous episode, we talked about a specific story. And that was one young female veterinarian having trouble with a calving. She'd arrived at the farm. It was a mud-covered pasture, raining downpour, calving cow, and chasing the animal around and around and around, and finally catching it. The animal then went down in the mud, which I'm sure all of us can picture, and she still couldn't get it. And upon calling her mentor to come and assist her mentor arrives, the clouds break, and the sun comes out. Now, we all want to be that mentor, right? We might not have weather controlling capabilities, but the ability to bring calm in the storm, to bring knowledge, to be able to solve solutions for our mentees is something that we want to be able to do. Now, I'd ask each one of you, how many of you has had a mentor? How many of you recognize it as a very important milestone in your veterinary career? Now, the other challenge that I want you to recognize is think about how much that was worth to you. When I think about the students that I've ridden with me, the students I've talked to, the young associates that I've worked with, the number one request or the number one concern I get from them after they consider salary, after they consider benefits, it's mentorship. How am I going to find a mentor? Is this practice going to have a good mentor? Will I have somebody that can guide me along the way? So I don't know about you, but clearly our new hires, the new vets coming out, identify this as a key thing when they're looking for a job or looking to make a career. Now, if that doesn't give you enough foresight or enough initiative to start a mentorship program in your practice, let me share some facts about mentorship and about retention. One of the first facts you need to know is that 54% of individuals claim that they don't currently have a mentor. Over half of the people working don't have anybody to guide them on their professional journey. 80% of learning in a workplace takes place informally. So if you don't have a mentor, how are you learning that? Are you looking towards your other employees? Are you learning it from your clients? How are you doing this after you've graduated from school and learned the 20% of maybe what you need to know to do your job? Another mentorship fact, 84% of mentored employees become proficient in their roles faster. Let me repeat that again for all you employers. 84% of mentored employees become proficient in their roles faster. Want to make your newest graduate a plug-and-play person in your system faster? Provide them with a mentor. That's going to be one of the biggest keys that can help your overall practice. If we're looking at something that can help you build your bullpen for your practice and help with retention, mentorship is a great way to do this, OTRs. Let's start with a couple simple facts again. 68% of millennials intending to stay with their organization for 5 years have a mentor, which is double the rate of their mentorless peers. Again, you can double the rate of your retention of millennials by having them hook up with a mentor within your practice or outside your practice. 71% of Fortune 500 companies have mentoring programs. So clearly, these companies with huge reserves, lots of research, have identified this as a very important offering to their employees. Why would we as small businesses ignore this? Forbes showed that actually only 25% of small businesses have a mentoring program. So there's a big gap there and potentially a reason why retention is a little bit lower. Continuing with retention, 72% of mentored employees were retained over 5 years versus 49% of non-mentored employees. So if you don't provide a mentor, less than half of your employees potentially would be retained after 5 years. Another reason to have a formal mentorship program in your practice. Finally, one last nail in the coffin of why you need to have a mentorship program. 89% of those mentored go on to mentor somebody else. It creates a perpetual system, allowing that feedback down through your employment ladder, helping each employee and each subsequent employee benefit each other, providing your business, in essence, a free training or a free value add to every subsequent employee. So if you haven't seen it by now, you're probably not going to see it, oh, it's yours. But now it should be clear why we need to grow this mentorship skill as business owners, or if you're an employee, why you need to find an employer that has some type of mentorship program or provide it for yourself. So how do we become AAA mentors? What do AAA mentors do differently? And this is where we're going to return to those four major categories, what's yours. Again, based on my research, my consulting, my discussions with students, and the discussions on several listservs, I think AAA mentors display four major traits. One, they're accessible. Two, they practice affirmation. Three, they're anchoring. And four, they practice scholarship. Now it sounds like any great friend, right? They're always there for you. They always are there to pop you up. They can act as the calm in the storm, and they always have information or some kind of viewpoint to help you out. I'm going to help you guys develop these skills a little bit. I'll give you three techniques or strategies that you can use to help your mentees excel in each area. First, the approachability trait. And this approachability trait, I think before we get started, needs to be placed in context. Many people, when they're being a mentor, think that they're approachable. But when you start to look at some studies, 41% of mentees said it's hard to contact their mentor. And this is where, as a mentor, you need to sit down and just reflect about how easy it is to contact you. In today's day and age, with text message, phone calls, Zoom, email, in-person meetings, there's no shortage of ways to contact somebody. But what we need to do is reevaluate how we can create those contact points. So the first thing I encourage you guys to do is find a routine. Now, whether that involves checking in or setting up daily, weekly, monthly, or annual reviews, however you end up doing that, just make sure you do it as a routine. By doing it routinely, you've developed this habit between you and your mentee, making sure that their mentorship needs are met and you're actually available to them at those specific times. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to meet or discuss or talk to each other at those times every time, but what it means is you are available during those times. Secondly, for approachability, I encourage people to break habits. If you haven't had a mentee for a while, or if you haven't had a new associate for a while, what you've probably done is established many classic habits that allow you to get through your workday, and they make you functional, efficient, and work really, really well. But when we have a mentorship relationship or a new mentee, We have to break our old habits. And a lot of these habits revolve around efficiency, working and then getting done and getting home to our families as soon as possible, working solo or working just with ourselves, or those types of habits. And what we need to do is we have to break those old habits and make ourselves more accessible, again, more approachable to our mentee. That means after we're done working, instead of potentially going home, you go back to the clinic and you're available for them to talk to you. Instead of doing things the most efficient way, you do things in the best way to actually teach them. And finally, instead of doing things by yourself, whether that's financials or creating marketing or doing a treatment plan or something like that, you integrate them in, and instead of being a solo practitioner, you kind of co-op that activity. Finally, to improve approachability, create opportunities. Most of the time, in some of the best mentoring and mentee relationships and discussions I've had, I didn't even know I actually needed mentorship, or the mentee didn't even know they needed mentorship. And that's where these routine, habit-established mentorships really excel. Fostering this environment of, you know, a daily round or a weekly meeting or a monthly or quarterly idea or reflection session and an annual goal setting are all different options of how you can create opportunities for these mentor relationships. Your role in whether you meet daily, weekly, monthly, or annually will really depend on your mentee and their current needs versus what their other mentorship opportunities are providing them. So really fit into that role, feel it out, but again, establish new routines, break your old habits and establish new ones, and create opportunities for mentorship. Next, OTRs, we want to focus on anchoring. Now, before I dive too deep into anchoring, I'll share a little personal story. So when I was in my second year of practice, I was doing a DA. I sedated the cow, turned around, set up my surgery kit, was getting everything ready. And I turned around and bam, the cow just went down like a box of rocks. And anyone who's ever had to deal with this probably knows that the headlock was, of course, one of the ones that doesn't open bottom up. So we had to take the headlock apart. Cow's stuck in the headlock. I'm reversing her, giving her fluids. Can't fix anything. I'm calling all of my mentors, basically trying to get advice. I go back, do what they said. And no matter what, whatever I did, it didn't help. Cow ended up dying. So I called one of my mentors up and he said, okay, it happens. He talked me through it. He said, okay, what'd you do? How'd you treat her? What'd you give her? What'd you counteract that with? We went through step by step by step. And he said, there's nothing you can do differently. He said, I'll be there at basically 2:30 that afternoon. We'll go post that cow at the rendering plant, but I want you to go cut another DA. In the moment, I was like, that's the last thing I want to do, right? Like, I just watched a cow die in front of me. I felt like it was my fault. But I was not ready to go do that. But he pushed me to go do the next DA. Later that day, we posted the cow, and we found out one of her ventricles had a paper-thin wall. And she was in some type of heart failure. It actually escapes me now what we actually ended up finding as the primary source. But there wasn't anything that I could have done. There wasn't any way I could have detected that. I don't remember a audible murmur or anything of that nature. But what my mentor taught me that day, and he sat me down after, and he said, you know why I pushed you to go do the next DA? And I kind of looked at him, and I didn't really know what to say. And he said, it's because you needed to get back on the horse. You need to realize that sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes they're out of our control. We can't fix them. And you need to move on and move forward. And that's a great example of what anchoring looks like, OTRs. Anchoring to me is, first of all, being the rock, number one, providing that unshakable confidence in them and what they do. And this becomes easier with experience, OTRs. The longer we practice, the more experience we garner. The less we're afraid of situations, the more different options we have or the ability to fix things, and the less anxiety we feel. So we need to teach and encourage a back-to-basics philosophy, because that's what we often do, right? As we become more experienced, we understand which basic to go back to, which is the core principle that can be dealt with during the situation. It's when problems are complex for your mentees, when they're overwhelmed or stressed, get them to return to what they know, things that they can justify, they can verify, and that they know at their very core. Be that rock for them, provide them the example, and show them how to get to that rock stage. Number two, return them to their first principles. We need to ground them in what we call first principles or undeniable principles. They're the basic, the absolute core of what we do. It's the truly important things in life. So sometimes they'll have rough days. Cows will die. Clients will be angry. And this grounding in the first principles, their core, undeniable principles, will help them overcome things like that. And these first principles can be things like family, faith, service, empathy, all of those types of things. In my example from that story, the first principle, the grounding principle, was next case, next client. Can't save them all. You do the best you can and you move on to the next one. To help you guys find this for your mentees, because this can be a challenging thing to find their core driving principle, I encourage you to help them find their why. And I like to do this again through the five whys exercise. If you go back to some of our earlier episodes, we go through this exercise. A simple Google search will give you an idea how to go through the five whys. And you can also work through a book. If you're looking for a book to work through with them, you can do Find Your Why by Simon Sinek. Simon is an author that wrote Start With Why as well, which is another good book for you guys to work through. But if you're looking for kind of an interactive book to work through together to get to their core, their first principle, their why, that's a good book as well. Finally, from an anchoring standpoint, we want to anchor our mentees in accountability. We want to hold them to action, progress, and growth. One really important fact is that 40% of written goals are followed through with, but 70% of communicated or shared goals are accomplished. So getting your mentee, again, coming back around to those habits of accessibility and scheduling meetings, doing an annual meeting based around goal setting, and then holding them to those goals, holding them to the actions, the progress, the learning that's needed to accomplish those is absolutely key. I like to think about this as killing the dreamer to create their dream. Stop them from dreaming and actually have them start creating their dream. Get them to take action. The other thing that's important in this accountability section is focusing not so much on new shiny objects or new techniques, and instead focusing in on what they value, or again, coming back to their why. So if there's somebody that really values client interaction or treating or taking care of people, coming back to that over and over and over again, making them accountable to making progress in that area versus, oh, I can go do lung ultrasound, or oh, I can go do tendon scanning, or whatever have you, in the different techniques that can be done. There's hundreds of different techniques in large animal medicine that can be done, but getting them to focus in their area of strength and interest at the same time of getting them to take action towards that is absolutely key as their anchor, as a mentor. Next, affirmation. Now, affirmation is the lifting up of the mentee. And I'll share again a short anecdotal story. About, it's 4 years ago now, which yours, I was going to do my first big speaking event at AVC. It'd be the first time I was in front of a really big audience. I'd done smaller ones, less than 50. But I was supposed to talk about technology in the workplace and inventory management. And I was really nervous. So the Monday before I was supposed to leave, I think I was speaking on like a Thursday or a Friday. I was sitting in our actual clinic and I was visibly nervous. And we were getting ready for our actual team meeting, our veterinarian meeting. My mentor at that point looked at me and goes, "Why are you so nervous?" And I go, "Well, I got to do this talk. You know, I want to get this done so I can get home so I can start practicing this talk again. You know, I want to get through it." I think at that point it was like 10 times through it. But he looked at me, and I remember him looking me dead in the eyes, serious as can be, and tells me, "You probably know the most about inventory management on anybody in the room, and probably know the most about technology. And if you don't, you probably know more than 75% of the people in the room. So just go into it and share what you've done here, share what you know, and go from there. There's no reason to be nervous. And I was like, oh, okay. That kind of makes sense. And then lo and behold, the night before I was supposed to leave for this conference, I get an email from my mentor, and it still sits on my desk today. And I just remember the general concept of it was, you have a great opportunity in front of you. Try not to be nervous, embrace the opportunity, make the connections, and just convey your knowledge. And I'll never forget that. That was affirmation. That was two examples of great positivity, great growth-oriented advice, and just constructive criticism to me that will stay with me forever. And that's an example of how affirmation can really help younger mentees, how they can really help them move forward and, again, take that action. So first, how do you build affirmation, or how do you improve your affirmation with your mentee? And I think one of the biggest things I want you guys to consider, and one of the biggest things I work with my clients, is imposter syndrome. And you've heard me talk about this before, OTRs. But a paper published in the Behavioral Science Journal showed that 70% of individuals in the U.S. suffer from imposter syndrome. And it's probably the most pervasive professional problem in our field. I could probably do an entire podcast segment on imposter syndrome, quite honestly. I think for this episode, we're going to focus in on just a couple of the key things that will help you get a mentee over imposter syndrome. And the big overarching key will be identifying the feelings of imposter syndrome with them, talking about them, understanding why they're there, justifying why they're wrong, and moving past it. I would urge all the mentors out there listening right now, or anyone who's ever thinking about entering a mentor relationship, to list or write down these six ways to help a mentee over imposter syndrome. First, you need to instill self-confidence and recognize the negatives that are going on through their mind. So help them to understand that they really are good veterinarians. They really have potential, and that when they hear negative thoughts in their mind, they need to identify and address them. Number two, reinforce their past growth, their past achievements. Talk to them. Tell them, yes, you've done this and this and this. And remember this case, you saved this animal. Those types of things will help them get confidence. Number three, remind them of their value to themselves, their value to their family, but also their value to the clinic in dollars generated or other services provided, and their value to their clients in dollars saved and in client relationships, all of those types of things. Fourth, you can establish their expertise. Talk them through something. Help them understand how they're better than you in that area potentially, or they're better than their peers, or they really are an expert in that area. Number five, help them build resilience. Help them to understand they can't make everybody happy, that some owners are just having bad days and you need to let them have a bad day. Build resilience around things like I talked about before, the unfortunate passing of an animal, or related cases like that. Number six, share your own imposter syndrome struggles. Use examples from earlier in your career, or use current examples. I know I have to check my thoughts at the door many times still while I'm in practice OTRs, and I'm sure I'm not the only vet out there that has to. Those negative thoughts are pervasive within our profession, and sharing your story and your fight with imposter syndrome will help them understand and overcome their own as well. The next affirmation tip I have for you guys is break stereotypes. Help your mentee ID and overcome the classic stereotypes, whether that's a woman in large animal medicine, men always doing it the hard way, or overcoming the classic, we've always done it that way. Whether they're a minority, a majority, short, tall, man, woman, doesn't matter. Stereotypes exist for everyone. Help them to break those stereotypes within their own mind, within their own practices, and with their clients. And that can be directly with them through conversation and talking strategies, or it can be indirectly by talking to clients and helping them understand yes, this person is X, Y, or Z, but that's fine because they do things a little bit differently, and it actually might be better than the way I do it. All of those types of things, helping them to break those stereotypes, is critical to their overall development as a mentee. Finally, encourage their uniqueness. Identify and encourage their unique skills, their unique personalities. We're all different and we all have different strengths and different skills. I highly, highly, highly encourage everybody who hires a new associate to do the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book with them. This book identifies the key strengths for each individual hire or mentee. I read my strengths and my weaknesses through one per day, continuously OTRs, so that I understand where my strengths lie, what the dark side, quote unquote, of those strengths is, and what my weaknesses are, so I can identify and address them and improve myself over time. And by helping your mentees understand their uniqueness and you understanding their uniqueness, you can help put them in positions of strength where they have strengths, as well as help them to avoid situations where their weaknesses would be exploited or exposed. Using resources like the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book is a great way to identify those. And again, if you do it together, you can share them and improve and strengthen your mentee-mentor relationship. Finally, OTRs, the last category I have for AAA mentor is scholarship. And I like to think of this as the best mentors set an example of lifelong learning. So first of all, lead by example. Show your mentees how to learn past vet school. Share your personal resources and challenges and what you're trying to learn in the moment. Discuss your past findings, your concerns, or what you think the future might look like and the skills they might need to develop. Encourage the see one, do one, teach one mentality that helps them, again, develop these scholarship skills. Secondly, practice the law of reciprocity. Embrace the two-way street that is the mentor-mentee relationship. And in no other category can you do this more than in the scholarship category. I like to think of it as ideas for everyone. They're going to have new ideas because they're younger. Potentially, you have more experience, but they have newer experiences and newer ideas. So you can exchange or practice reciprocity between each other of those ideas. It helps you to keep up with that half-life of facts over time. It also helps you practice or portray humility and show them that, again, this lifelong learning is something worth pursuing. Finally, it gives you a way to talk about the future. The things that they're learning in school are potentially the future for our profession. So they're obviously very important things for you to understand and for them to holistically grasp. So discussing these things in the context of scholarship is incredibly important. The final scholarship technique that I love is plugging your mentee into your system. Put them in your network. Just remember, we might not always be here. Something might happen to us. They might move on with their career or find a different mentor that's a better fit for them. But if I plug a mentee into my network, I am continuously giving back to them for the rest of their life as long as they're fostering that network and that relationship. That gives them basically access to my strengths, the places that I learn, and provides them lifelong growth opportunities well beyond when I'm able to still influence them positively. So I'll wrap this up, OTRs, with a final thought. Mentorship is not hard, but it shouldn't be taken on lightly. You need to actively grow your mentoring skills. Come up with a plan. It doesn't have to be point by point by point, but it should be more formal than what comes off the top of your head. And this will help your business, much like many of the facts we discussed at the beginning of this podcast. If you're looking for a mentor, a lot of times if you go to a CE conference and you look to your left and look to your right, if you pick out one of the gray-haired people there, they're pretty good sources of information. If you're looking to mentee, You can join a program like AABP's mentorship program, or you can do the same thing as the young people and look to your left, look to your right at a CE conference, and pick the non-gray-haired people. Either way, seek those connections, seek to share your knowledge. And just remember, if we mentor somebody, there's an 89% chance they're going to go on to mentor somebody else. A chain reaction of development within our profession. So let's seek to do that, OTRs. Let's seek to have an impact years from now, years beyond when we are gone, that we can positively change our profession and the world. Thanks for joining me today, OTRs. Next time, we're going to discuss the final aspect of mentorship, and that's, can your boss be your mentor? So tune in next time for a short discussion about what mentorship from a standpoint of being a boss or having a boss as your mentor might look like. Until next time, OTRs, carry on. If you liked this content and want more, join our OTO community at otovets.com/Facebook. Also, check out our blog at otovets.com/blog. And don't miss our cutting-edge episodes where we cover the latest in peer-reviewed scientific research related to large animal veterinary medicine. You can find the written context at otovets.com/cutting-edge, or you can listen to it at our podcast at otovets.com/podcast. Please join our community for an active discussion about today's podcast, past podcasts, and other decisive topics within veterinary medicine. Thanks again for joining us today, OTRs, and carry on.